What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to another episode of the always thrilling America Trends. Hey, John, I'm Larry Rifkin, by the way, John Krofcik, of course, my sidekick. We're working together on this wonderful project, and we love doing these podcasts. I hope you enjoy them, too. At the end, we'll tell you how it is that you can really make a difference so we can keep these coming onto your phone or your computer, however you're listening. But, John, remember the guy Roy Orbison?
Of course, yes.
Well, yeah,
Pretty Woman.
Big, yeah. Yeah. What? Wait.
Pretty Woman. Do, 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 do. Won't you walk on by?
Yeah. No, but then he had another song. Only the
that's
lonely.
That's another one, yes.
Remember that? That
yes.
was a great song. But it's kind of a sad tale. I have musical Tourette, so I will just start with right. anything. But Only the Lonely was a great song. But it really talked to us in those days about loneliness. And we didn't really talk about loneliness, I don't think, that much in the 1950s, because everybody was involved with things in America. You were joining groups. Everybody went to church. People lived a lot closer together. They right. lived in these three-story walk-ups.
You had family and extended family.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yep. Right next door or right in the next room.
Yep.
Or you
or
were sleeping
nearby.
Four in a room. Remember those
yes.
great days? Well, listen, John, I'm going to ask you, because I always bring you into these things, and you always give an honest appraisal. And feel free to avoid any one of the questions that I'm going to pose, because maybe this is a little unfair, but do you ever eat alone? I mean, do you ever go yeah. out and have anything to eat alone? No?
Rarely. No, rarely.
Okay. You ever drink alone?
No.
Okay. Well, I guess you're a sociable drunk. No, I'm only do you ever bowl alone?
Never have bowled alone, no.
Well, remember the book by
yes,
Robert
bowl,
Putnam?
Yes, you're right.
And
bowl.
That was the book that really led us to thinking about social isolation in this country. We had Bob Putman on our program when he was doing a piece about children right. in America Today. What a brilliant sociologist.
Stuff like that, bowling, golf. I think it's more fun when you got competition, you know?
Yeah. I guess so, but I always looked at the pins as my competition,
yeah.
and I'm going to knock you down.
Yeah.
Well, did you ever go to a drive-in alone?
Never, no.
Well,
no.
Of course not. You would never admit that anyway. How about, did you ever double date alone? You know, where the other couple had two and you were alone? No, no, you never did that. You ever go to the drive-in?
Think about that. Yes, okay. I've been to the drive-in.
Now, what is the point of this interrogation,
yes,
you might
what
be
is
asking
the point?
Me? Well, remember Dr. C. Everett Koop?
That name does ring a bell.
Yeah, and he was all cooped up as the U.S. Surgeon General.
That's right.
And you remember smoking really was his big concern
right.
here in America. Well, we've got a new U.S. Surgeon General until perhaps Donald Trump finds out that we actually even have a Surgeon General, Dr. Vivek Murthy. And I don't know a lot about him because I think C. Everett Koop was the last Surgeon General we had that a lot of people knew, paid
right,
attention to.
Right.
He had that long beard.
Right.
And
he came on
like,
TV.
Yeah, he looked like one of the Luden brothers or whatever. Well, this new Surgeon General, and he's telling us that it's not cancer, really. It's not heart disease. It's not obesity that he considers to be the number one public health enemy here in America. You may be shocked by this. But he really thinks it's social isolation.
Well, I can see that. I can see older people not having people to talk to and stuff. I think that, it's depressing, I think, for them. And, you know, when everybody's died off and, you know, their kids or whatever don't come in and visit them. So, yeah, I kind of believe that that's a big problem.
But it's not only older folks, honestly, though one third of people 65 and over actually live alone. And then when you get to 85, and a lot of people are living that long, about half of the people are living alone.
Right.
And so you always hear these PSAs, you know, if you have a neighbor who is older, ask him how he's doing during a storm or an emergency, because lots of people are isolated. I mean, how many people who are listening to this program actually even know who their neighbor is, or have they talked to an old college buddy or whatever recently? And particularly guys, we're really bad at this, John.
I admit, yep, I am bad at it. My wife's much better. She's more sociable than I am.
Though you and I, we talk all the time.
Oh, we do.
And which is really a godsend. No, really. But I have really been reaching out, particularly at a time when I'm transitioning to kind of a softer lifestyle. I've really been reaching out to a lot more people. And if I can get them to buy me lunch, all the better.
There you go. Or you can take them to Costco for free lunch.
Yeah. And then I've got all kinds of buddies around me. And I always race the older people, you know, to them. I give them a little bit of a head start. But seriously, there was a piece recently in the Boston Globe. And this really got my attention. The author and the writer is Billy Baker. And Billy Baker, who's in his 40s now, John, was given this assignment. And he said, oh, my goodness. He went back to his desk and he didn't even know if he wanted it. And his editor said to him, I want you to do a piece on the impact of social isolation on older men. And men really are distancing themselves. And he said, why did he give me this? Why did he give me this assignment? And Billy realized that maybe he fit the stereotype of a guy so wrapped up in his work, so wrapped up with his children, that every social interaction he had was based upon them and maybe their athletic pursuits or something at work. But many of those relationships, as good as they are at work or as good as they are when the kids are with you, really aren't the real stuff. Where a guy can talk to another guy.
I agree. We tend to judge people by the job they have more than who they really are. So, yeah, I can see that.
So a lot of us guys really disconnect. And they say that unless we schedule time together, we're really bad at it. Whereas women, they will get together on the spur or they'll go out to celebrate something. Where guys, well, you know, I'll send him a text or, you know, somehow I'll send him an email. And even when we talk, sometimes you're on the phone for 2 or 3 minutes. Hey, how's it going? Good. How are you? You know, we don't really interact with each other.
How about those socks last night?
How were those socks last night? I don't know. I couldn't find them when I took them off. No, but, you know, with all of that said, what I found really interesting was that this Billy Baker from the Globe ended up, after writing this article, getting so much input as a result of this. So many guys coming out of the closet saying, you got me. That's me. I've cut off all other human contact, and you really made me think about it again. And Billy forced himself to go back and kind of make more routine some of the ways he was interacting, but he could not believe the response to this article. It touched such a nerve.
Well, the other side of it is we think of ourselves being so connected now with the internet and all that, that, you know, that's kind of amazing.
Well, but the internet is not helping. In fact, Dr. John Huber, who's going to be joining us shortly to talk about all this, does document that that actually removes us. I may call you a friend on Facebook, but I may never call you, period.
Oh.
John, will you like me on Facebook? It's so much easier to like me on Facebook when I'm a two-dimensional whatever than a three-dimensional person. Well, listen, why don't
we bring that picture of you in front of that mansion in Westport.
Oh, yeah. Well, anybody could have taken the same picture. I didn't own the place, but it was public property, so you could take the picture. Well, listen, Dr. John Huber has a sheepskin degree that allows him to talk about this more authoritatively.
Okay.
But seriously, this is a big problem in America, and we're going to talk about it.
Well, let's bring him in.
Let's do it. Our guest today on America Trends podcast is Dr. John Huber, and he's the chairman of Mainstream Mental Health, a nonprofit organization that brings lasting and positive change to the lives of individuals that suffer from mental health issues. He's also a professor, and we've had you on before with us, John. Thought your insights were so provocative that we wanted to bring another psychology-related topic to you and get your take on it. I've been reading so much about social isolation, and our U.S. Surgeon General saying that this is more difficult difficult in terms of a topic than even obesity and cancer and heart disease, that he's more worried about social isolation causing premature deaths than just about anything else in the country today.
Well, I think he's right. I think there's so many things that can go wrong by isolating ourselves. I mean, first of all, we're social animals, and we get reinforced in our body systems, whether it's the endorphin system, our serotonin system responds off of that human connection and isolating ourselves. Even though we're probably in a lot of ways more connected than ever, we're not connected with humans.
Well, what are we connected to?
Social media, your laptop, your iPod, your cell phone.
I know. But do we think that that really can appropriately take the place of the real interaction, either telephonically or in person, God forbid? I mean, do we really think that those are meaningful relationships?
Well, that's the conundrum. You know, there's individuals like yourself and me who have never experienced this until like the last 10 or 15 years. But now you've got a generation coming up who they know nothing else but a world full of smartphones. And they don't get it. Because, believe it or not, when you click on those social media and you say you like somebody on Twitter or you like something on Facebook, you're getting a little bit of a dopamine drip, and it reinforces that. And it feels like you're having a real contact with another human being. However, it's empty. It's like empty calories drinking a soda instead of, you know, eating real food.
Well, I went back to 2006, and I was looking at a study saying that social isolation is growing in the U.S. And this goes back to 2006. Now, I think that might have been the time that Robert Putnam was writing that salient book called Bowling Alone. But let me just read this. And now, this goes back, again, over a decade. A quarter of Americans say they have no one with whom they can discuss personal troubles, more than double the number who were similarly isolated in 1985. Overall, the number of people Americans have in their closest circle of confidants has dropped from around 3 to about 2. How does that strike you?
Well, I think that for that time is real. I think it may be even worse now.
So you think it's continually getting worse because of all the other ways that we look to communicate, or is it because of the way we're tending to live in these very isolated places or in an apartment walled off where we don't even know who's across the hall?
I think those are both factors, totally. But I think the biggest thing that is new, because we've always had apartments and lived in that kind of honeycomb environment. We've had networks of places in our world that's done that. It's that social media again. And, you know, if you look at some of the current research that says that if you have 7 or more of these social media apps, you are 3 times more likely to be clinically depressed.
Really? I mean,
yes.
Wow, 3 times more?
3 times. Now, if you look at the research when Facebook first came out, it was talking about how wonderful it is for people who are maybe medically unable to get outside their house or get out of the hospital, how they can connect that and stay in contact with friends. And what the research continues to show is if you have less than 3, that you're probably pretty good. You're probably okay. But when you hit 7, you're 3 times as likely to be clinically depressed.
When we look at the situation in America where we don't join groups in the way that we used to, we don't associate in churches and other fraternal organizations, and I remember de Tocqueville way back when writing about democracy in America saying one of the great things about America that he saw back in those early days was the fact how we all did join together and work together. What has happened before all the social media to begin to make isolation more the norm than getting together?
Well, I think we had new ways of entertaining ourselves. I mean, when I grew up, I was lucky if I had a stick and a rock and I could make anything with that. And then I got my Hot Wheels and boy, I was in heaven. And now the kids get Hot Wheels on their PlayStation and they drive their cars and shoot people, and they stop getting this idea that, hey, let's go outside. They go, no, let's sit down in front of our TV and turn on the Xbox and see who we can kill today.
Well, do you think that it's not only what's going on with social media trying to take the place of real contact, or maybe we think because we can reach out to so many more people on social media that this is really fun and it's better than just communicating one-on-one? Because I noticed a lot, Dr. Huber, where when somebody's talking and they've got a smartphone with them, I mean, they're paying attention to the person across from them for a short period of time. And then they're wondering whether there's a better opportunity and something more interesting and exciting on the phone.
They are. And that's why when I sit down with, for example, with dinner with my family, we don't turn the phones upside down on the table. You turn them off in my house for dinner when you're with somebody else. And because you have this need to look, and I'll just text while I'm listening to my significant other talk. And there's some strange things that are happening. We're finding out now that people have text apnea. Most people actually hold their breath when they're texting their message.
Huh, really? I never heard of that.
And it's just recent. I mean, I just heard about it about 3 or 4 weeks ago. And when you're not breathing, you're lowering the oxygen content in your body. And therefore, your brain starts functioning differently.
Well,
and not effectively.
Let me go back. I mean, because we've always thought of ourselves in America as individualists, and we like that notion that we're one of a kind, we're unique. But at the same time, we did build all these incredible bonds. When you look at the Lions Club and the Elks and fraternal order of this and that, and we like to join things. When did we stop wanting to join things?
Well, I started thinking about this a while back, and we used to, growing up, we had block parties. You know, somebody, hey, we're barbecuing this weekend. And so, okay, so we got some stuff, and we pull our grill down, you know, partially down the street or out in the front, and everybody, you know, would ride their bikes up and down the streets where mom and dads were cooking dinner. And you don't see that anymore. In fact, we're lucky in our neighborhood that we have some very friendly people, and we have a block party, and it's through our neighborhood watch organization. But over the years, it's slowly become just a core group of people. And then we invite friends from outside the neighborhood to come in there. And so it's changed. And why? Because we don't get participation. People, oh, it's hot outside. It's sunny. I might get sunburned. And I'm going to play on my Xbox anyway. Adults telling us that.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, I want to go back. I mean, we look at Robert Putnam and his book,
right,
Bowling Alone. And then we go back to 2010, The Lonely American Drifting Apart in the 21st Century, Dr. Richard Schwartz and Jacqueline Olds, his wife. And I want to read a comment that somebody made on Amazon about this. As spring erupts in my community, a pleasant urban setting, you can walk down the streets and rarely see children playing outside. The most frequently observed people on the streets are young mothers and their children, or people walking their dogs. In recent municipal elections, roughly 7% of registered voters bothered to cast a ballot. Is this all tied together?
I think it is. We're losing contact with our next-door neighbor. We're losing contact with our organizations, whether it's the Masons or your church or Boy Scouts, and we have to make a concerted effort to make these things happen, because it's too easy just to sit down in front of your television, sit down in front of your laptop.
But when you think about World War II and how quickly we had to mobilize to get ready for that war, we weren't ready as Americans, but there was something about us together where we were involved in organizations. We did live on top of each other in these three-story walk-ups. We did know our neighbors at that time. Did that help us to mobilize? I mean, for example, today, and we did a piece on this on America Trends about requiring national service. If that were requested or required today, or a draft, how do you think people would respond, given their isolated view of themselves and their connection to our community and our larger community, the United States?
I think there will be an uproar, but I think doing that service may actually solve some of these problems with that connectedness.
Mm.
Because we're not in a place where, you know, mom and dad makes you go to Sunday school, and mom and dad makes you go to soccer practice, and mom and dad makes you get out of the house because you're in their hair. You know, you go sit in your back room and play your games. You come back out, you eat dinner, you walk back into your bedroom, and you've left mom and dad alone, and they're on their tablets and their cell phones, and, oh, where did the night go? And they crawl into bed, and they start over the next day. If they're bored, if they need to find that stick to play with, it's a lot easier for them to say, hey, let's get outside. Let's go to the park. Let's go to the lake. Let's go to church. Let's go, you know, for a walk around the neighborhood. Let's go see if somebody in the neighborhood wants to play a game of basketball or football.
What
having
happens?
That service. I'm sorry.
Go on.
Well, I was going to say having that service requirement can be like hair gel and pull things back together and keep them together, because now we have shared experience. We've done things we didn't think we could do. I think it would do a lot for the Second Amendment people if everybody gets trained in how to use guns, and some of these fears that people have about guns might go away. Some of them might be exacerbated, but historically, looking at military service, I think it would be minimized. But we'd have real training in how to utilize guns, and we'd know what was going on when somebody tries to assault somebody, and there wouldn't be so much of a fear factor. I think there's a lot of cohesiveness that could come from that. Again, I think it might be political disaster for somebody to push it.
When you look at busyness, which has taken the place of a lot of relationships, there was a piece recently in the Boston Globe. Billy Baker was asked to write it by his editor, and he said, why me? You know, I'm in my 40s, and he wanted someone in the newsroom, the editor did, who looked as if he was totally consumed in his family life and in his work life and had become disconnected from others. And Billy Baker could not believe, Dr. Huber, the reaction that he got to this, where particularly guys of a certain age saying, wow, did you pinpoint me and my situation? And does it happen more with guys that unless we have a routine reason to get together, we're playing hockey at midnight, or we're playing basketball or cards or whatever, that in fact we will never really continue the contacts we had in high school or college? Is that more the norm as guys age?
You know, I think it goes back to typically how we raise guys versus girls. I mean, and boys usually get a car or a ball for their first toy. Girls get dolls and stuffed animals. Now, of course, that's stereotypical, and that doesn't always happen, and we try to go out of our way today to do that, but the reality of it is a lot of our children are still presented that way with their first gifts. And the boys learn how to push the car around, and they grunt and make the car noises. And the girls, before they can even talk, infants start doing nonverbal communication with their dolls and sitting them down in front of each other and their stuffed animals and starting that communication gap. Right there, boys are losing ground with the communication. Now we become adults and we still, hey, what do you want for dinner? And it's, whatever, you know. And we keep doing that. And guys, that's how we communicate with each other in a lot of instances. I have actually friends in my office right now from high school that we work together after 30 some odd years of being apart, you know, and there's a lot of, we just kind of know each other, and there's not a whole lot of conversation for some social reason. Now, when it comes to work, we sit there and spell things out and we communicate really well, but then it's like, I don't know, what are you doing for, I don't know, whatever. Okay. And that's it, you know? But we know if the world collapses on either one of us, we're going to be there. There's that camaraderie there, but the communication's not.
I got to tell
so
you,
I think being distant.
A lot of the writing about this subject seems to be coming out of Boston. Robert Putnam out of Boston, and then of course Dr. Olds and Dr. Schwartz out of Boston. And all of these folks, seemingly, this Billy Baker article. Now I'm reading another article, Dr. Kalar. He's an MD, resident physician, Massachusetts General Hospital. And it was really compelling, this piece he wrote in the New York Times back in December of 2016. And he wrote, every day I see variations at both the beginning and end of life. A young man abandoned by friends as he struggles with opioid addiction. an older woman getting by on tea and toast, living in filth, no longer able to clean her cluttered apartment. In these moments, it seems the only thing worse than suffering a serious illness is suffering it alone. Social isolation is a growing epidemic, one that's increasingly recognized as having dire physical, mental, and emotional consequences. Since the 80s, the percentage of American adults who say they're lonely has doubled from 20% to 40%. As a doctor and somebody who deals with issues of the mind and the heart and the spirit, I mean, how much do you see this debilitating the American psyche?
Every day. I go to the hospital. I was there this morning. I have a patient who's been in the hospital for, 4 weeks? And I was talking with him, have you had any visitors? And he starts telling me, oh, yes, this person's coming to visit. I go check the visitor log. He had somebody come in 2 days after he came in the hospital, and there's nobody logged in since then that's come and visited him. That isolation is real, and I see it every day, and it's scary. I pray that doesn't happen to me.
I also read in this piece that the less we have as a social connection, we have disrupted sleep patterns, altered immune systems, more inflammation, higher levels of stress hormones. This has got to be what the Surgeon General is so worried about.
It is. And that's why I'm at a hospital. I'm not a medical doctor, but I'm at a medical hospital. I go in there and I do therapy with these patients, and it's totally different than what I do in my office. When somebody comes in here because they're openly depressed or they're having marriage problems, what I do in the hospitals is dramatically different. Because so many of those patients, they just need that human contact, and they want to tell their story. They want to be heard. And so we do touch on, their treatment compliance and like that, and then I let them run, and it's amazing what patients tell me.
And how concerned are you that this growth, which Dr. Kular was talking about in his article, from 20% to 40%, I mean, that's almost half of our population in a circumstance where they are disconnected and isolated from others. That does seem like a very dangerous trend.
I think it is, and it's one of the things I've got at my university classes. I give my students opportunities to come and shadow me at the hospitals, and probably about 30% of those students become volunteers at the hospitals and just go up there and spend time with patients that don't have visitors, don't have family. I think they're seeing it, and these are millennials, and I think they're seeing, hey, look where our country's going. This has got to stop. And so I see moments of clarity and brilliance that maybe these millennials are picking up stuff that we're missing.
Well, again, in this article, human connection lies at the heart of human well-being. So we're starting to make this connection. What is the medical community? I mean, I love to hear what it is that you're doing, but what do you think that connection means to many in the medical field when they hear that somebody has not been visited or someone really has no one to make certain they're taking their medications or watching as to their sleep patterns? What does that say to you, and what do we need to do? What can the medical community do?
Well, I know I was invited 7 years ago to go to two of these hospitals, and it was from the doctors who saw this happening back then. And they're like, we need somebody who can be in here and make those connections with them. And I wasn't looking to go work in a hospital. I got personally invited. Hey, can you do this? Is this something you'd be interested in? And I've, over the years, just brought more and more students. I've got some students that graduated 5 years ago. They're still volunteering at the hospitals. They have no reason to be there other than that human connection, and they're getting something out of it, or they wouldn't be coming back.
This is Dr. John Huber. We're talking about social isolation in America, and this is not an academic exercise. I mean, this is something that is so real and palpable, and we see so many other outgrowths from this. Things like hoarding, where people hoard all of their memories, and they just get consumed and overwhelmed by the past and who they were and the relationships they may have had, but they're not developing new ones today. You also say that there's a new study that reveals that binge TV watching causes depression. Now, everybody is the rage with all of the entertainment options we have today, and they think that this is good, that we can at least communicate with other people about what we're watching. I mean, Big Little Lies was just on, and I was communicating with people about that, speaking of unusual relationships. But this binge watching, there's so much entertainment, but it's so passive and not interactive one to another.
And it is non-interactive, period. That's the whole problem. And so when I have patients who tell me they do that, I try to encourage them to make a social event of it, invite several friends over, tell people to bring something to eat, and somebody else is in charge, make it an event like we used to do the Super Bowl, invite all your friends over, and let's binge watch this weekend whatever series you want to watch. But don't do it alone. I also tell them to treat it like a long-distance drive. Get out of your car every hour, hour and a half, stretch your legs. Hey, between episodes, get up, walk around your house, go water your garden, pet your dog.
Then go back and what about this with Netflix? I mean, where they encourage you, sit down for an entire weekend, just turn the phone off or put it on vibrate, don't respond to anyone, and dig deep into these characters with whom you will never interact. I mean, in any way, maybe you'll get on a chat board and start talking about all of them, but there you are 12 hours in.
Yeah, you know, my wife and I did that with Game of Thrones, and it was last winter, and we got rained and iced in on the weekend, and neither one of us wanted to leave, so we just sat there, and we'd never watched it, and we watched the first episode, and we got caught up right there in that 2-3-day weekend with the ice storm. We were stuck inside. But we did it together, and it was actually fun. We would laugh at things that were crazy, and, oh, my God, that would never happen. How did that person think of that? And it became a social thing with us. Our kids would come in and watch parts of it. As it got inappropriate, we'd kick them out of the room, whatever. But, you know, we actually interacted a whole lot during that. And now it's kind of funny because last season we watched it regular as it came out every week. Of course, it was recorded because my schedule is so crazy. And we sit there silently watching the single episodes. But when we binge watched it, and we talked about this about 2 weeks ago, my wife and I, we sat there and we were talking during the whole thing about the show, but we were interacting and acting more like a couple than we ever do sitting there watching the weekly series.
When you look at everything, you look at our housing patterns where many of us live on an acre plot and we don't know our next door neighbor, really couldn't call upon them in an emergency unless we really had to. If you look at the fact that many are living these atomized, isolated lives within urban settings too, even though they're in close proximity, the number of real relationships that they have is limited. Then we look at all these entertainment choices. Then we look at how well connected we are with Wi-Fi everywhere. Are these pressures to go into your own space and be yourself in a very isolated way? I mean, are they overwhelming the culture in a way that is bringing this to the top of the heap in terms of health crises that our Surgeon General sees? And I don't know how we overcome this because there is so much stimulation that doesn't take a lot of the work that a relationship takes.
Right. And then you sit there and you're at your desk or at your computer or at your couch watching these shows and interacting with a lot of these things you can actually use on your game consoles now. And you're inactive. You're weakening your body. You're losing bone density. You're losing muscle mass, all the things that start reducing our lifespan. So, you know, on one hand, I think on the surface, if you see it, hey, we're doomed. But on the other hand, like I mentioned before, I see moments of brilliance. And I think human beings are resilient. And the generation that's going to be most affected by it, my college students and high school students, I see them already changing and starting. I mean, just in the past, you know, 9 months, I've watched in my neighborhood, now basketball goals are sitting out there. And I actually see kids playing basketball that I haven't seen outside in 5 years.
So you think maybe we're starting to say that we as social animals, we need each other and we've got to work at it because this is not something that you can do passively. You got to make the telephone call. And guys are really bad at this. In reading this piece by Billy Baker, men need an activity together to make and keep a bond. Women can maintain friendships over the phone. His wife, he said, is capable of having long phone talks with her sister, and yet when he gets on the phone, guys seem to share no feelings, and basically the call lasts about 5 minutes.
Or less, yes. And men are only taught that socially we can express anger. So we can't even, you know, express love without somebody giving us a weird look. So, and that's what we've done to ourselves. We've trained ourselves, yet we see now in the millennials that they're much more, you know, it started, I guess, with the emo generation about 15 or 20 years ago, and it's kind of evolved. And now guys can actively talk about how they're feeling, and I see it on campus at the university, and it's kind of different for me because I'm like, wow, guys are actually saying that they're uncomfortable, and wait, you know, we never did that. You know? And again, I think as a species, we're resilient and we're going to find a way. There will be those shining stars that punch through that darkness. And I have a lot of faith in the human animal. And I see that we're going downhill a little bit, but nothing is a straight, even slide. So maybe we're still heading up. We just are having a correction in the marketplace right now.
Just two other things. How much of this is cultural? Because if you go to many other societies, I mean, they will walk in on each other. It's almost like Ralph Cramden in the old Honeymooners. And every 10 seconds, Art Carney is barreling through the door. Hey, 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 Ralphie. Today, if somebody walks in your home unannounced, they're likely to be met with a shotgun more than a welcome. I mean, it's really...
Right here in Texas, for sure.
Yeah, in Texas, yeah. Maybe double barrel. But you know, how unusual is our culture as opposed to many of the others that are much more inviting, that want people to be walking into their home, that want all of this interaction?
Well, you know, we're still getting immigrants in here, and we're seeing little microcosms of differences, but it's not very long. Sometimes within that first, you know, immigrant population, but usually within the first generation that's born here, we see them almost instantly switch into the same isolation patterns that we're seeing here. What we're seeing overseas, just like with the type A personalities in third world countries, as they become more developed, they start absorbing the same types of patterns. And they're doing that with electronics around the world as well. Now, there's a whole lot of countries out there that don't have the electronics we do, and they still are those social animals. They live and they have nuclear families, and they depend on the community. So this isn't worldwide, but it is first worldwide.
I do also notice one other trend, and you have written about it, and you're talking to others about it, I know, Dr. Huber, and that is this post-election anxiety, where a lot of people, and I have a cousin who I told just the other day, he keeps sending me things, and he's watching, and he's posting, and he's interacting online, and anything that meets his political philosophy, he wants to share with others, but he's so into it, he's so deep, and he just can't get out of it, and it's consuming him. And I said to him, you really need to take a break from this stuff. I'm concerned too in many ways, but you really have to back it off a little bit. What are you seeing?
I'm seeing the same thing. Whether you love the current administration or hate the current administration, they're doing exactly that. They're reading everything, and they're reading headlines. They're not following up and doing their own research. They're not getting other sources of information to back it up. I mean, growing up, I would get the newspaper in the morning with my folks, and we would read through, and I'd have to go find and look for a news report during the day on the radio or on television, or going to the library at my school and try to follow up and find out how much of this is really going on. We just get inundated with headlines after headlines, and people read them, and the headlines are there to draw their attention. So they're emotionally laden, and it just blows that anxiety out of the water, period.
And the other thing that I worry about is another reason for us to isolate ourselves from the other, meaning 50% of the people disagree with whatever position you're taking. So it's just another reason not to communicate with 50% of the people. And we're not doing terribly well with the 50% who may agree with us. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us once again on America Trends podcast. Dr. John Huber, the chairman of the Mainstream Mental Health, a nonprofit organization. If you want to check his work, it's at mainstream.com. mentalhealth.org, and always a pleasure to have you with us to help us really highlight some of these really important issues psychologically here in our country. Thank you.
Thank you. It's an honor to be on.
If you like this episode of America Trends Podcast, will you please leave us a kind rating or a review on iTunes? John, is that too much to ask?
No, or even a comment. Give us in the comment section on the ones that you liked. And, you know, you can also email me at newsletter@rifkinradio.com. And that's another way you can contact us with your ideas.
Don't forget, your review really is important to us. And John, they may say, why? Why is it so important? Well, the more
why?
You
like, tell us.
You're even
tell us
asking
why.
That.
Why?
Well, the more you like us, the better placement we get, which then helps us improve our rankings and visibility so that more people can enjoy us. And the more people, John, you see how this is spiraling?
It's getting out of control there.
The more people who know about us and like our content, the greater chance we have to encourage advertisers to hop aboard. You see how it works now, John?
I understand now. That's very interesting.
And we don't want these folks who are listening to miss a single episode of America Trends Podcast. I mean, we're recording tons of them, aren't we?
No, and they're all very interesting, and we got some really good stuff coming up.
Oh, we really do. But we want you to subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher.com. And when you do subscribe, let us know on Facebook and Twitter. Our handle on both platforms is @TrendsPodcast. We want to thank you personally for subscribing. In fact, John may have a very beautiful thank you gift. John, what is it? No? Ran out of them?
All out of gifts.
Oh, my goodness. Well,
sorry
please,
about that.
Please send us your ideas and questions for future episodes and topics on America Trends Podcast. We can't think of them all, right, John?
That's right.
I mean, my head's already exploding.
Ooh, yes.
You see it? Cloud above. Is there an author you'd love to hear from? Or a subject you'd like to learn more about, send us your ideas on Facebook and Twitter. And by the way, you can direct message us at Trends Podcast or use #TrendsPodcast. You can also add an email address if you have one that you want to give out. And we do not, right, John? We don't share our list.
No spamming, no list getting out. You just get our newsletter.
Absolutely. And you can access our full show archive on our website at americatrendspodcast.com. For more information on America Trends and for the latest updates on our upcoming episodes, be sure to like our page on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. You can find us at Trends Podcast. Oh, by the way, and John, this is really important, and you know
what that. What is it?
Well, if you buy from Amazon, we have joined their associates program. So you go to americatrendspodcast.com before you purchase, and you click over to Amazon from our Amazon store.
That's a very good point, because it doesn't cost them any more money to do that.
No, that's all built in.
And then we get a few pesos.
Yeah,
but podcast going.
You know, if we get a small VIG, you know, 2 or 3%, if you don't do it through us, you're just giving more money to Jeff Bezos.
Exactly.
And he doesn't need any more money.
He doesn't need it. That's
and he doesn't
correct.
Do any podcasts, I don't think. So please, with no added cost to you, it helps us to bring you the content that you're enjoying. And thanks.
Thanks, everybody.
Please keep listening.